All right. Well, let me start that again. Good afternoon. The Senate Committee on Human Services will come to order. It's Wednesday, May 31st. We have absolutely nothing interesting on the agenda today, which is why there's absolutely nobody in the room to watch what we're doing. I also understand that the Oregon history class at Ashbrook Independent School is watching. So hello to the middle schoolers that are watching Democracy in Action. Everybody wave. Hello. Okay. We are going to start with, do we have Representative Nathanson and Senator Steiner Hayward in the room? Great. We are going to open up a work session on House Bill 3262.
Would you like me to read the summary or allow them to talk?
Go ahead and read the summary, please. Right. Thank you, Matt.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3262A requires the DHS, in collaboration with other agencies, to adopt rules related to the prescription of psychotropic medications to elderly persons or specified persons with disabilities. It requires rules to include a review of prescriptions, consideration and use of non-psychotropic treatments prior to prescription, and continued non-psychotropic treatments and in conjunction with the prescription. It declares emergency and is effective on passage. There are dash A6 and A7 amendments. Would you like me to read summaries of those or allow?
Let's allow the members to explain them.
All right.
All right. Thank you. Welcome, Representative Nathanson, Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. 13. Since your last public hearing and meeting and very full discussion, there has been a lot of work on this bill, and this is another example of two heads are better than one. More conversation can result in even improvements and making a better bill. I'm very pleased to tell you that we have amendments for your consideration. The effects of the Dash 6 amendment address some issues that were raised during the public hearing and also in subsequent conversations with at least one of the persons who testified at the hearing and in some other email concerns that we worked on. The first thing is the issue of gerontologist or geriatrician was raised and who should be involved in the review. And after discussion, with much thanks also to Dr. Senator Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, we've concluded that there are certain ways of describing things, such as like using primary health care provider, that already include some of the other professionals who we were going to be naming individually. So instead of naming some of those individually, it was sufficient then to say simply primary care provider. So one of the changes is in that section. Another change is we have moved from the concept of the approach of allowing up to two doses before this second set of eyes kicks in. We've changed from that approach up to two doses to something different that, again, working with other professionals, healthcare professionals, and in discussions, we settled on this new approach, which is instead of up to two doses, it allows, it requires notification of a new prescription, and that's a key thing to understand. Notification of a new prescription, that notification would be made to the primary or mental health care provider within 24 hours, and then it allows for the administrative, it allows for the administration of that new medication for up to 7 days while the prescription is being reviewed. So that's a more flexible way of doing it. It allows time. And I, the reason I also wanted to call your attention to a new prescription for a psychotropic medication is that pre-existing standing orders are not even discussed in this bill. Pre-existing standing orders, of course, continue as they have. So that should not be a concern. That's not the intent of this bill, and it's not addressed by this bill. The final thing is that this dash six amendment makes it clear that the person-centered assessment takes place first, but that whatever is deemed to be the best course of action as a result of the assessment will be followed. There was some concern, well, this is to eliminate the use of psychotropic medication, and that never was the intent. So this makes it very clear that whatever the assessment concludes will be the appropriate course that should be followed. The dash 7 amendment is shorter, but we think this will also be very helpful to address issues like, well, what about in the implementation of this? Are there any unintended consequences that we did not allow for? What else should we do that might need to tweak this a little bit? So the dash A7 amendment requires DHS to convene an advisory committee to advise on best practices in the implementation of the bill. And that advisory committee must include all of the entities that were mentioned in the bill, plus the stakeholders that should come together and be consulted. And that report should be presented to the Legislative Assembly by the end of this year. So a few months, give them time to assess what's going on with the implementation, but not so long that if something needs to be fixed, we would be able to fix it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Senator. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Steiner, Hayward State Senate, District 17. I'm here mostly as a sidekick and to say what she said, and to thank both Representative Nathanson, Senator Mona Sanderson, and Dr. Maureen Nash for their hard work on this. The only thing that I would add, in addition to everything that Representative Nathanson said, is that there were some concerns about whether we should be looking at a process that's analogous to what we implemented for foster children. And while I appreciate the thoughts that were behind that, I think this is a very different population. Foster children are not able necessarily to make their own decisions about medication. These are older people who can make their own decisions. The situations are very different, and the levels of autonomy and self-determination in this population can be very different than in our foster children. We need to be very protective of both populations, but in very different ways. I'm really pleased with where this bill ended up and hope that the committee will give it its strong support. And I want to thank everybody for their hard work on it.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Senator Knope.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for being late. So are we looking at both the sixes and the sevens?
The hope is to adopt the dash sixes and the dash sevens.
Okay. So my question has to do with, so I was looking at this. I think we solved the gerontologist issue, and we went with mental health care provider, and I was checking for definition of mental health care provider. Is that in the bill, or is there another definition somewhere in law that relates to this particular amendment?
Madam Chair, Senator Knope, thank you for the question. We're including both primary care provider and mental health provider, both of which are defined elsewhere in statute.
Okay. Follow up.
And we're using those definitions.
Follow up.
So my understanding of the amendment is that, and maybe this was true with the underlying bill as well, is that DHS is going to be the place where we report, or where physicians report, or?
Madam Chair, Senator Knope, because of the role that DHS plays in working with community-based care and in-home care and long-term care facilities, we thought it appropriate to have that be sort of the home base. But you'll note that in the underlying bill, it does require DHS to do this rulemaking in consultation with the Oregon Medical Board, the Health Authority, and other relevant organizations that can provide important and to have a very, I mean, any rulemaking process should be open and very inclusive, but we made it very clear in this bill that those two specific groups should be included because DHS's primary expertise is not necessarily in the healthcare arena, but they are in the they do have expertise in the arena of protecting older Oregonians.
Right. Yeah. Follow up. So, and I agree with you and understand that part of it. I just have a little concern about, and I don't know, maybe you do as a doctor, having sort of a new entity. I don't know if supervising is the right word, but overseeing the medical community, as it were, because they're obviously they have an agency which they a board which they are regulated by,
right?
And so this you know, kind of introduces a little bit of a new element to it. And so I just want to make sure that we've kind of gone through the ramifications potentially of that.
Madam Chair, Senator Knope, thank you for raising that concern, and I appreciate your concern about it. I would say that we've already actually done this. I mentioned earlier the fact that we'd implemented regulations around prescribing psychotropic drugs to foster kids in Oregon, which were very important to implement as well. And in that case, DHS is also actively involved with implementing and supporting those regulations. In this case, I think that the issue is really not so much on the physicians, it's on the facilities where people live. And so DHS does regulate those facilities. They're not actually regulating the physicians. They're not. We are not saying that doctors or nurse practitioners or PAs cannot prescribe this. We're not saying that the primary care provider or the mental health provider, the primary ones that the patient already has a relationship with, has to approve or disapprove. We're just saying that when people are in these kinds of residential living situations and they're prescribed a new medication, that the facility is being regulated to report that to the patient's primary care provider or primary mental health provider. So DHS is actually regulating the facility and the behavior of the facility, not the behavior of the medical providers. So I'm pretty comfortable with that. And I have not heard concerns from other physicians that they see that as an issue. But I appreciate the opportunity to clarify that.
Follow up. And as a Google doctor myself, I would not be regulated under this bill, correct?
No, sir. You would not be regulated under this
bill. Perfect. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, we're all good there.
All right.
You okay? Thank you.
Final comment.
Yes, Senator
I just want to thank Representative Nathanson for being so open to my concerns about the bill and with the Dash 7s, where there's an advisory committee of stakeholders, if there are problems in implementation, that, you know, these will be picked up because, like, I don't know the protocols at the long-term care facilities and how easily is this going to be implemented, et cetera. So I am comfortable with the Dash 7s as well as the Dash 6. So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. And we are in a work session. Got to find the right one here. There we go. We have this.
Great.
Senator Imbro.
Yes. Chair Gelser, I move to adopt the Dash 6 amendments. Those are dated May 22nd, 2017.
Senator Imbro moves to adopt the Dash A6 amendments dated 5/22/2017 to House Bill 3262. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Imbro.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the A7 amendments dated 5/31/17.
Senator Imbro moves to adopt the Dash A7 amendments dated 5/31/17. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And are you okay with the, Senator Knope, are you okay with the next motion? Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking final action on House Bill 3262 without the fiscal and or revenue impact statements.
Senator Imbro moves that the rules be suspended so that we may take final action on House Bill 3262 as amended without the fiscal and or revenue impact statement. No discussion is allowed on the motion. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
So, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3262 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Imbro moves House Bill 3262 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Just briefly.
Yes.
So, happy to suspend the rules and move this along without a fiscal, knowing that if there's a problem with the fiscal, I know who has to fix it.
That would be the two people sitting right here.
Exactly. So it ends up back in your lap if there was an issue. And so, and I do appreciate the underlying intent of what you're trying to do with the bill. So,
That's an excellent point. And I just want to thank you. I know Representative Nathanson and Senator Steiner Hayward, how hard you've worked on this and just how nimble you've been in responding to concerns, some of which came at the very last minute. And I think it's always important that people be open about concerns that they have. And as a chair, it's very frustrating if there are organizations that don't raise concerns on the first side. We talk to each other on both sides, and it's better to get those concerns out early. I am never interested in killing a colleague's bill with concerns that have not been raised until the very last minute. So with that, is there any objection to sending this to the floor? Seeing none, the bill is sent as amended to the floor. And Senator Steiner Hayward, will you carry?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Wonderful. And I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3262A and opening up a work session on a little bill called House Bill 2004A.
Okay. Would you like me to read the summary on this one? Or
why don't you read the summary, and then I will describe the amendments.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2004A permits a landlord to terminate a month-to-month tenancy without cause in the first 6 months of the tenancy with 30-day notice. It requires cause and 30-day notice when the landlord terminates a month-to-month tenancy after 6 months or for a fixed-term tenancy. It specifies exceptions and requirements for their use. It permits certain landlords living on the property to terminate a tenancy without cause with 30-day notice during the first year of a tenancy or 60-day notice thereafter. It permits a tenant to terminate a month-to-month tenancy or fixed-term tenancy without cause with specified 30-day notice. It requires landlord offer a renewal or fixed-term tenancy of a fixed-term tenancy with 90 days left to the end of the tenancy. It requires a fixed-term or convert to a month-to-month tenancy. If landlord does not offer a renewal, tenant fails to accept offered renewal, or tenant fails to terminate the tenancy. It establishes penalties and a one-year statute of limitations for violations. It permits the city or it also permits the city or county to implement rent stabilization programs and specifies requirements for such programs. It sets effective dates for fixed-term and month-to-month tenancy provisions. It declares emergency and is effective on passage.
Thank you. So we have had more than a little bit of conversation about House Bill 2004. And to everyone that came to the public hearing we had earlier, I really appreciated everyone that testified, both in favor and opposition to the bill. I know that this is an issue that has really captured the attention of people all over the state and is really driven by a crisis that is being experienced in the districts of many colleagues of mine, including most of the folks that are sitting at the dais here. We have in OLIS literally thousands of letters from tenants and landlords all across the state expressing their perspectives, their concerns, and I think it's really important at the outset. The vast majority of landlords are great landlords, and the vast majority of tenants are great tenants. And when we do laws like this, what we are addressing are the issues of the minority of Peter Buckley taught me to never say bad actors. What is it that he had to say instead? It was bad apples or... But apples are good too. Anyway, most people are well-meaning and do the best they can. So what we have today to consider are the Dash 9 amendments, which make changes to the underlying bill of underlying House Bill 2004. And I just want to outline what those are, then we'll have some discussion up here at the dais. The first is that in the base bill, House Bill 2004, the bill proposed to lift the preemption on local communities for doing rent stabilization. The Dash 9 amendments removed that provision from the bill, so that rent stabilization piece would no longer be there, and instead it would that would be replaced with a provision that says that a landlord can increase the rent for any individual tenant only once every 10 months. There is no provision in that in that amendment for how much that rent increase can be. It's just the frequency could not be more than once every 12 months. The Dash 9 amendment also changes that 30-day no-cause eviction grace period from 6 months to 9 months, so that no-cause could be, that 30-day no-cause eviction notice could be given in the first 9 months of a month-to-month tenancy. And then after that first 9 months, the eviction would have to be for cause with the 90 days notice with the new cause categories added. So you could still have someone leave if the landlord intends to convert the unit into non-residential use or wants to demolish it, wants to sell it, wants to move into it. There's that whole list that's very similar to the underlying 2004. It preserves the piece that if it's a landlord-based cause, landlords that are operating five or more units would pay 1 month of rent in a relocation cause. One of the questions that came up before was, what happens if I only have two units, but my units are operated by or managed by a property management company? Does that throw me into that over five? It does not. The number is based on how many units the landlord owns. So you could own two units, operate two units, you could have that management sent out to a property management company, you still wouldn't fall into that place that is paying the relocation fee. And then it's important to remember that if the tenancy is within the same structure on the same property that the landlord lives, that a no-cause eviction can still be issued after that first 9 months, that would be with 60 days notice. There's a new provision in the Dash 9 that says that a landlord cannot issue a no-cause eviction even in that first 9 months within 60 days of receiving a written request for repairs that are necessary to correct a violation of the building, health, or housing code, or to correct an uninhabitable condition that's described in statute. So what we're talking about are violations of codes and basic habitability standards that we heard a little bit about in the hearings, and we've heard a lot about those in the forums with some concerns about retaliation. And that provision actually came from a number of landlords that wrote in and suggested that. It states that the Dash 9 has a fixed-term tenancy, would be for at least 6 months unless a shorter term is requested by the tenant. The Dash 9 restores the typical fixed-term lease. So if you have a 12-month lease, at the end of that 12 months, the contract is up. It doesn't automatically roll over. It does require that the landlord inform the tenant 90 days before the end of that fixed-term lease whether they intend to renew the lease or not, and the tenant needs to respond to the landlord at least 45 days before the expiration of the lease about whether or not they intend to kind of accept that offer of the renewed tenancy. And that's important so that people can get it back on the market. And then if the landlord does not inform the tenant, if that notice never comes, then at the end of the contract, the tenant can either move or it rolls into a month-to-month, and you deal with it from there. And that is it. It replaces 2004, and those are the Dash 9 amendments. Senator Knopf, were you pointing at Senator Knopf, or were you raising your finger?
I was raising my finger.
Okay. Senator Knopf. No, you were pointing at her.
Madam Chair, do you want me to...
I was not pointing at all.
You were just...
You saw something that was not there.
You were flickering.
Possibly.
Possibly. All right. Why don't we move the amendment, and then we'll move into the discussion. Senator Dimbrough?
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the A9 amendment stated 531.17.
Senator Dimbrough moves to adopt the Dash 9 amendment stated 531.17. Senator Monis Anderson.
Thank you. This is one of the most important bills for my constituents in my district. I need to put that on the record because this would never have come to, it would not have been a priority for me unless I went through the campaign that I went through last summer and fall. And the number one issue was housing. It broke my heart when I'm talking to residents particularly seniors and young families or single moms who are displaced, are being displaced. And although I don't think this goes far enough in helping many of those tenants, this is a good start because we are in a crisis. And I live in East County, Gresham, and when I'm having so, and I have one duplex, I'm a landlord, I only have one duplex, and I try to be very sensitive to those without money and who are good tenants that aren't destroying property. I wish this could be a bipartisan bill because I know there's been a lot of adverse, negative opposition. Or just plain not even positive opposition. But I just can't express enough how important this is to the people in my district. They are being displaced, and we as Oregonians need to make sure that there's housing for everyone. And I think this is one good step forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Senator Denbrough?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm going to support the amendments, but I'm not entirely pleased with them, I have to say. I think that the section on the just cause, no cause, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think the changes that have been made, I think, having a probationary period for the tenant where the landlord has more flexibility in terms of, seeing if it's a good fit, if it's a good tenant, et cetera. I think that does make sense. And the nine-month period, I think makes sense. I'm sad to see the changes in the rental side of it. I mean, the rent payment side. And I say that because, I know that I've just heard from so many people who have had sudden, unexpected spikes in their rent, in the 30%, 40%, 50% range, and in some cases even higher. And, when people are living, kind of day to day, where they don't have a lot of money saved up in reserve, it's very, very difficult for them to deal with that kind of unexpected spike. And I understand that those spikes are done for, business reasons, but these are people's living conditions, and it's very, very hard for them. I wish that landlords could be more deliberate in the amount of increases that they do. I mean, give them on a regular basis a small amount, something aligned with the cost of living. I mean, that's fair. That's to be expected, and it's something that a family can plan for. But when you have something that is of that magnitude, that just kind of comes out of the blue for a tenant, it is very, very tough, and my heart goes out to people who are in that kind of situation, especially when they are having difficult times because of the market finding another place to move to when they're faced with that sort of spike. So I was hoping that, I assumed that the bill was going to be amended, but I hoped that it would be amended in a way that would find a reasonable cap on what a tenant could discover when they get that letter in the mail telling them their rent's going up. Having said that, the restriction on the rent going up more than once a year, I think, is, it's something, and at least it allows them a measure of stability. But I'm afraid it's still not going to be enough to keep a lot of people in my district and other districts out of a lot of misery and a lot of fright.
Any further discussion? And so I would just say I I hear the disappointment from both of my colleagues and some of the changes, and I share some of that. My goal has been to try to come up with amendments that give us the potential of making some change for renters. Now, I agree that it's a crisis. I wish that there was a way to give some more tools to local jurisdictions to be able to address needs as they come, and recognizing that housing needs and pressures vary over time, just based on what's happening. Clearly, it's not been lost on me, or I think on any of us, that supply is a really important piece of this too. We need more rental housing, but I am hopeful that with these amendments, this gets us to a place that when we send it to the floor today, we can get it across the floor and back to the House for concurrence and onto the governor's desk for a signature so that we can have some immediate relief. The other hope that I have, and this is something that's been raised to me a lot, is that this did not go through the Landlord-Tenant Coalition. It can't go through a Landlord-Tenant Coalition when the Landlord-Tenant Coalition is not meeting. And people stepped away from that table, and it is really important to the state of Oregon that table comes back together in good faith to negotiate. My understanding is that there's discussion about that happening, and I very much hope that occurs. Oregonians have a lot at stake on this issue, whether they are the landlords or they are the tenants. This is just integral to so many people, and you've got many folks who have folks in their families that are both renters and landlords, and it's really important to have that forum. So I just really ask people to come together in a meaningful way where nothing is off the table. It has to be a place where there can be open and frank conversation and collaboration to ideas. That doesn't mean that everybody gets what they want. Everybody gets what they want, but to be a meaningful collaboration, you can't be saying certain things are off the table and we'll never talk about them. So I think it's really, really important that people come back together. So with that, any further discussion? Is there objection to the -9 amendments? So please note Senator Knope as an objection to the -9s, and Senator Olson is excused, and he was excused on the other as well. He'll be excused for everything. All right, so the amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2004A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Dimbrough moves House Bill 2004 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? Please note Senator Knope. And
discussion.
What? Oh, discussion. Discussion.
You're moving kind of fast.
Sorry.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Probably no one in the legislature has more experience than I do dealing with all the issues that go into the bill that we have before us today. As many people know, I work in the housing arena. I work for builders and developers running their association in Central Oregon. I also work for a nonprofit that creates and develops affordable housing. And I can tell you it's incredibly difficult. And it is my belief, after spending a third of my working adult life very attached to this, is that this crisis is a problem that was created by poor policy, and poor policy from this body. And you cannot suspend the law of supply and demand as it relates to housing. And the reason we have unhealthy markets today is because of well-intended but wrong policy as it relates to our ability to create housing. And so there's really four major functions in costs as it relates to creating housing, and that's the land itself, and then in most communities is SDCs and fees, materials and labor. And the only real issues that this particular body could have impact on is the cost of the land and SDCs and fees. And this body has chosen again and again to make land more expensive through of the regulatory process as it relates to being able to develop property, because there are many developers who wish to develop affordable housing and are unable to do so because they can't make it pencil because of land costs and because of SDC costs. And I will give you an example of how a healthy market worked and how it no longer works in the city of Bend. So right about the year 2000, my wife and I bought what I think most people would consider a starter home, although it was, I think, our third home in Bend. Only one at a time, though. Not a landlord. Never quite had the courage to do that, and I respect people who put all their assets and livelihood on the line to do that. But back about 2000, so we bought a four-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath home, about 2,000 square feet, for about $136,000. That was affordable. It was affordable for us. And that same house today would probably be in the mid-300s. And that is because of lack of supply and a continually increasing demand. And so Oregon's land use policy has made it so difficult to expand a UGB and to have actually to follow the law and to have a 20-year supply of land, and therefore prices have risen on land. And so it makes it incredibly difficult to replicate, and they couldn't, you know, in today's market, you couldn't replicate what we bought for an affordable price, really. And so a lot of those starter homes are $350 plus, and you know that stretches the ability of most Oregonians who are middle income to be able to afford housing. And so what we're left with is a crisis essentially of, you know, either legislative inaction or action. And House Bill 2004, although I believe it's well intended, and the amendments are better than the original bill, but it's already had a negative impact on our community, because I've been contacted by many rental owners who have put their house, they just said enough, and they put their houses up on the market, and those likely aren't going to turn back into rentals. They're going to turn into owner occupieds, which is going to make the problem worse. And so until we are ready to deal with the underlying issues that will actually resolve the problem, I have to be a no vote. And so, you know, therefore today I will be a no vote on the bill.
Thank you so much.
Yep, you're welcome.
All right. With that, is there any objection to sending the bill to the floor? Is that noting Senator Knope and
besides
Senator
me.
Olson absent? All right. Not absent. Noting him excused. Senator Olson is excused. I appreciate the comments. I appreciate the discussion today. And I appreciate everybody that's in the room. And with that,
Madam Chair, can I just say one thing, just yeah. in response to Senator Knope? You know, certainly issues around land are a contributing factor to housing, and you know, we need to have more development, but we have to be very careful, I think, in blaming our land use system. And I know that he wasn't blaming the land use system writ large. But we are seeing a very similar trends in many cities around this country. I was in Nashville, Tennessee recently, speaking to colleagues there who are experiencing very, very similar conditions of housing prices going up, rentals going up, and it's because people want to live in Nashville. People are moving to Nashville in a way that wasn't prepared for. Nashville does not have a land use system, really, to speak of. And many cities that don't have a land use system anywhere near approximating ours are experiencing this same trend. As we heard from our state economists, the cost of borrowing money is at least as important a factor in our high development costs as land availability. This is a complex issue. There's no silver bullet. 2004, in its original form, was not a silver bullet to solving this problem. But we have to do what we can, and I do believe that this will at least alleviate some of the negative impacts on individuals.
All right. Thank you. And so we actually already voted. There were no objections except for Senator Knope, and Senator Olson is excused. So the motion, the House Bill 2004 as amended, goes to the floor with due pass recommendation, and I will be the carrier. I will close the work session on House Bill 2004 and open up a work session on House Bill 2347. Yes. Can we hear the bill while you're working on that? All right, thanks. Why don't you work on that and we'll have Taylor do the summary? All right. Thank you, Taylor. Welcome.
Waiting for two more quickly.
Waiting for two more. All right.
Yep.
Are they here?
Yep.
He's trying to come through the through the crowd.
All right, but I can get started.
That would be great. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Taylor Smiley Wolf. I'm here on behalf of Speaker Kotek to introduce the -4 amendments to House Bill 2347 in front of you today. So I'm just going to summarize briefly what these amendments do.
Taylor, can you get a little closer to the microphone? People in the back are having difficulty hearing you.
Sure.
Thank you.
How about now?
Is that better? Elizabeth,
is that good?
Is that better? Okay, thank you.
Okay, fabulous. So again, introducing the amendments on behalf of Speaker Kotek to House Bill 2347. These are the -4 amendments. What these amendments do, they say that policy changes to the TANF program and caseload reduction, so savings from those two things, must be reinvested in the cash grant amount prior to those funds being used for other things. The reason for this is because since 1996, after welfare reform with the transition from AFDC to TANF, the cash grant amounts have not been increased by inflation. So what we're saying here is if the program is saving funds, those savings should be reinvested into restoring that initial value of the cash grant. So I know that the amendment has a subsequent to Ways and Means. And in Ways and Means, we do need to make one clarification if they do get sent there. And that clarification is that this change wouldn't affect the budget adopted by this legislative body for the 17 and 19 biennium. So that is all I had. And if there are questions, I'm happy to take them.
Thank you. And are there questions for Taylor before we move on to the rest of the panel? Great, thank you.
Chair Gelser and members of the committee, for record, Philip Kennedy Wong. I first want to start by thanking the committee for allowing us to introduce this amendment to open up a very important conversation with respect to really the state's best tool for fighting poverty, especially among single mothers, the TANF program. I want to start first by giving you like a quick chronology. I was told I have like 45 minutes, right?
No. Nobody even laughed.
Okay, just kidding. no humor today. I know you got just dealt with, you know, very
it's deadline
bill,
week.
But I thought I'd try, but, you know, that's why I'm not a comedian. But I wanted to start with, like, a chronology of the TANF program over the last, I would say, 7-plus years, just to give you a sense of where House Bill 2347 fits in and why this amendment is a key part of
and
that.
And if you can keep that more specific, because we already had the public hearing on the bill,
right.
So we're really just at the work session right
yes,
now.
Yes, I completely understand. Yeah. So I want to sort of say, well, I want to say that there were a lot of parts, as you know, from 2007 when the TANF program was restructured. That was part of the work that Speaker Kotek and to my left, my good colleague and friend John Mullen. And unfortunately, those changes in that 2007 bill never really had the opportunity to really get implemented because we hit the recession immediately. Fast forward to the budgets that followed, you know, we did see substantial cuts to the TANF program, and unfortunately, it left a lot of people, especially single mothers with greater challenges in their life, those who are experiencing some form of trauma or so, they were sort of left hanging because of the way that our federal requirements are for the TANF program. So a lot of those single mothers got kept on the program with no services, and as a result, you know, they develop greater challenges, because the longer you wait and live in poverty, the harder it is from a psychological and emotional level to overcome it. The good news is, as the economy recovered, and as you know, from 2015, we had the opportunity for caseload savings. But we also know that we didn't have enough savings to restore many of the components that 2007 had tried to propose as the ideal form of the TANF program. Last session, there were roughly $40 million in caseload savings. About $28.5 million of it was put into House Bill 3535 to reinvest back into the program. But the one thing that was missing is what this amendment is about. And, you know, of the components that have not been funded, the one thing that has been sort of left out, unfortunately, whether it's an oversight or not, but in many ways, the cash grant levels. And you know, you could argue that these were phantom cuts that were taking place over a period of 20 years that has eroded in terms of what it actually provides for a single mother trying to get her life back together again. So I want to share just a couple of numbers just to give you a sense of perspective. So in 1970, the cash grant in AFDC was $104 a month. In 1996, it was $460 a month. And today it's $506, and those were all for a family of three, so a single mother with two children. If you were to adjust it to 2017 dollars, that original $140 a month would be essentially $1,016 a month. So suffice to say, we have a long ways to go, and we hope that this amendment is a way to sort of remind us and the state legislature that we owe, you know, these mothers who are on this program to do them right, to help them get out of a very difficult position, and recognizing that the cash grant is a key part of it. So at this point, I want to turn it over to my colleague John to talk about essentially the arc of what he has started with and how it continues today to House Bill 2347. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. I'll be brief because Philip, Mr. Kennedy Wong, did most of the background information. I just want to point out a couple of things about why this amendment is important. The grant amount actually hasn't been raised since 1991, so prior to the conversion to the TANF block grant. And there's little incentive for states to actually work with the TANF program because of the fixed dollar amount. I think in Oregon we can do better than this. When we were envisioning what became House Bill 3535 that Philip talked about, we had bipartisan support from the committee, from representatives Peluso and Representative Stark, to talk about the things that we wanted to see happen in TANF over time. And I'm really very pleased that the speaker has come forward with something that has really been something that's been egregious. Because back in 1991, I was director of Clackamas County Social Services. When somebody was on ADC back then, they could actually rent a place and make ends meet. As Philip has talked about the grant levels, you obviously know the case that people really, really struggle to be self-sufficient. So the fact that we would be looking at investing further savings into the program to work on increasing the grant is important. And Madam Chair, you were, of course, were part of the discussion this morning about the rebalance. And it's interesting to note that of the $50 million worth of savings reversions from DHS, $30.2 million of that comes from savings in the TANF program. So I want to commend the department and the good work that has been done about helping people to get back to work, reducing the caseload. And now we need to do some further investments in the program. And so very much delighted to have this amendment to the bill that the speaker has brought forward.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the panel? Matt, do we have what we need?
Let me check. This may take a few seconds because our system's been awfully slow today.
Yeah. All right. So while we are doing that, why don't we do the amendment, and then we're waiting for our fiscal light because the bill is going to Ways and Means, but we're waiting for the paper that says so.
Yeah, if you don't mind, Madam Chair, if we stand at ease, maybe I can contact the Secretary of the Senate's office, find out if we can suspending the rules to move the bill to Ways and Means.
So we don't know that it's coming?
Hmm?
We just did that for another bill, so we could do that for this one, too.
Yeah, I just spoke to the analyst, and they said that they can't get the reviewers are in another meeting, and she can't get her reviewers to finish her analysis
until 2:30. So we need to suspend the rules?
Yes.
All right. Okay to suspend the rules to send it to Ways and Means? All right. Excellent. So let's patch back together this script. You got it? With the – well, we need to do the – okay, so you'll do this first, then we'll come to the rule suspended.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendment dated 5/31/17.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendment dated 5/31/17. Is there any discussion?
Yes.
Senator Bonacy Anderson.
This is a Ways and Means issue, and so I'm a little uncomfortable. You know, I'm definitely going to say yes, send it to Ways and Means, but because I don't know the ramifications of this amendment on the budget and how that system works, you'll be able to figure that out down in Ways and Means in your sub. But it is a Ways and Means issue, so I'm glad that we are sending it down. But I can definitely vote for it to send it to Ways and Means. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So we're doing this one.
That was the discussion. Is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, so ordered. All right, now you do this one.
Chair Gelser, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking final action on House Bill 2347 without the fiscal and or revenue impact statements.
Senator Olson moves to suspend the rules for the purpose of taking final action on House Bill 2347 without the fiscal or revenue impact statement. No discussion is allowed on the motion. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And now we have this. There you go.
Chair Gelser, I move House Bill 2347 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Olson moves House Bill 2347 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there a discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes and the bill is sent to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. And I will close the work session on House Bill 2347. And would anybody like to suspend rules to invite Senator Olson to vote on the other two bills?
No.
No? You do not wish to vote?
No.
All right. Okay, so we're at our deadline. That is the end of our bills.
So all the human services issues have been dealt with and resolved?
We have solved all the problems in human services. The children are safe. People have secure homes. The elderly are
riding horses. We've come a long way.
Great work, team.
Yeah.
So we may have some informational hearings. It depends. Because we're at 1 o'clock session, and I know people have other things to do, probably not a lot of them, if not any. We may have one more just to talk about our interim plan. So stay tuned, and I will check in with each of you to see when and if that is convenient. But as you know, 1 o'clock hearings get canceled all the time because we'll get to spend a lot of time together on the floor. And I'm just really grateful to everybody. We've tackled some pretty not so uplifting issues in the committee, and I've appreciated your willingness to stick with it and listen carefully to all the people that have come in. I just feel really lucky to be a part of this committee and have so many people willing to share pretty vulnerable parts of their lives. So with that, I guess we are adjourned for today unless there's anything else for the good of the order. Nope, we are adjourned for today unless there's anything else for the good of the order. Nope, we are adjourned.